This is your Sound Off Extra review for WWE Clash of Champions 2019 here from Charlotte, North Carolina. A show that had, if I had to really boil it down to the most important things, we had a cameo, not surprisingly, at the end of the show by The Fiend, Bray Wyatt, who did not make a single appearance at Madison Square Garden this past week. He was not on Raw. He was not on SmackDown. They saved him for the pay-per-view here tonight, so we got to see him. We also got to see somebody else that we weren't expecting, or I wasn't expecting, and that is Luke Harper, who I just got done talking about on the podcast earlier. You know, there were these reports that Vince McMahon, he really doesn't really have any ideas for the guy or doesn't know what to do with him. He's not the biggest fan of Luke Harper, which I believe, by the way. Just because he showed up tonight does not mean that Vince McMahon is his biggest fan. But there he was during the Roman Reigns-Eric Rowan match and helping Eric Rowan get the win, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. And the third thing that really stood out to me tonight on this show was the Raw Women's Championship match between Becky Lynch and Sasha Banks. I thought that was a great match. You know, the finish was obviously not the most satisfying because they're going to continue this. They have to continue this, heading into Hell in a Cell. But in terms of, like, up to that point in the show, it got the most emotion and the most reaction from the crowd of anything on the show. People were into it, and I just thought it was a really great match. So those are the three things that stand out to me on what I would say overall was a good show. I wouldn't say it was anything more than that. If I had to give it, and I hate giving the number rating thing, but if I had to go 1 to 10, you know, this show, I'd probably go 6.5, 7, somewhere. I wouldn't go higher than that. That's probably where I would be. I would be in that 6.5 to 7 wheelhouse, which I think is fair. It's just, you know, it was a pay-per-view. That's it. It's not the kind of show I'm going to go back and watch again. We opened the night. We had two kickoff matches. First, we had Drew Gulak defending the Cruiserweight Championship against Lince Dorado of the Lucha House Party and Humberto Carrillo. And I missed the first couple of minutes of this match, but I did see most of it. I thought it was a nice match. Highlight was Carrillo hitting a doomsday device of sorts out to the floor on Dorado. Dorado had been on Gulak's shoulders, so that was cool. Aztec press from Carrillo to Dorado, had the match won by Gulak. He posted Carrillo, and he steals the pin to retain the championship. You know what? If these guys are always going to be relegated to the kickoff show anyway, I like the idea even more of merging 205 Live with NXT and just making the Cruiserweight Championship an NXT belt. That's the rumor. Triple H, he didn't say it, but he gave that interview to Newsweek a few days ago, and he kind of alluded to the fact that, well, you know, you're going to start to see 205 Live, you know, being integrated more with NXT. He didn't outright say 205 Live was going to end. I think it'd be a great idea. I really do. You take a lot of those talents, you put them on NXT. NXT is expanding to 2 hours. You get Cruiserweight title matches on the TakeOver specials now instead of the freaking kickoffs that nobody cares about half the time. I think that'd be the way to go. The other kickoff match, and this was very strange. Oddly enough, the other kickoff match was AJ Styles, which may have been his first appearance on the kickoff, defending the United States Championship against Cedric Alexander. Not used to seeing AJ on the pre-show. It was very weird. I hope this does not become a regular occurrence. For the time they were given, which was not nearly enough, I mean, they barely gave them 5 minutes. Not even 5 minutes they gave to AJ Styles and Cedric Alexander. But for the foreign change that they did get, I thought this was really good. I thought this was a really good 4.5 minutes. Right away, as soon as the match starts, Michinoku driver by Cedric for a near fall. AJ hit him with a Styles Clash on the floor. There was a calf crusher in here. Cedric made the ropes. He fought back. AJ nailed the phenomenal forearm. A second Styles Clash picked up the win. I had AJ winning because there's no need to rush the title onto Cedric. I just didn't think it would go 5 minutes. That was disappointing. Now, you know what it felt like to me? And it'll be very interesting to see when the reports come out later tonight or tomorrow. It felt to me watching this like they got their time cut and they were just working on warp speed to put on a quick match, get all their shit in. That's kind of what it felt like to me. Anderson and Gallows, they come down, all three of them gang up on Cedric, they give him a beatdown. This was AJ's revenge. I mean, look what happened to poor AJ at Madison Square Garden last week. He got stunned by Steve Austin, and then he got pinned by Cedric in the main event. So this was his revenge. I'm sure this will continue on. Pay-per-view itself opened with the Raw Tag Team titles being defended, Seth Rollins and Braun Strowman defending against Dolph Ziggler and Bobby Roode. I refuse to call him Robert Roode. It's just lame. I'll call him Bobby. This played out exactly. You won't see me coming on here talking about Robert Heenan, right? I call Bobby Heenan. I call him Bobby Roode. This played out exactly the way you would have expected. Heels worked over Rollins, made the hot tag eventually to Strowman. Rollins tagged himself back in. He ran wild. Strowman gave Roode a running shoulder block in the ring. And accidentally, I put that in air quotes, accidentally knocked Roode into Rollins. Rollins then hit the buckles hard in the corner. Braun went after Dolph. Dolph dropped down. Braun goes soaring out over the top rope to the floor. Roode hits the glorious DDT to Seth Rollins, and he pins the Universal Champion to win the Raw Tag Team titles for his team. Who didn't see that one coming? And I am being sarcastic when I say that. The miscommunication leading to the loss of the feuding champion. Who did not see that coming? Rollins looked like he just found out that his dog died, or that Will Ospreay had a better match than him or something. Strowman stormed to the back. And yet, another glorious DDT win for Bobby Roode. We've seen a lot of that on TV. It's not Dolph Ziggler getting the win in these matches. It's Bobby Roode. You know, which goes to the whole story about Roode being a favorite of Paul Heyman's. That bodes well for him. Because guess what? He's being featured on TV. He's got a title. He's in a semi-prominent role now. It's more than I could say for Bobby Roode 3 months ago. So he's in a good spot right now. They had to get the belts off Rollins and Strowman. This was as good a time as any. Builds tension going into the main event. The match itself, it was okay. Then we got Bayley against Charlotte Flair for the SmackDown Women's Championship. Charlotte connected with a big boot right in the first 3 seconds. Tried for the early win. I feel like we saw that a few times tonight. We saw it in the AJ and Cedric match, right? Big move right out of the gate going for the quick win. This was the second match of the night, the second match out of the first four where we had an opener like that. And Bayley kicked out. Charlotte was a woman possessed, beating the hell out of Bayley for a good 3 minutes straight. Referee backed Charlotte away from her because Bayley is down in the corner. Now, in doing that, as the referee is backing Charlotte away, what he does not see is Bayley removing the bottom turnbuckle pad. So when Charlotte comes back over, Bayley pulls her down face first into the exposed steel and pins her to retain the championship. Quick match. My review of the match may have been longer than the match itself. This did not even go 4 minutes. But I loved this. I loved it. Because this is exactly what I had talked about. This is exactly what I had called for earlier today on Sound Off episode 617. We need to start seeing Bayley incorporating more heelish tactics and heel mannerisms into what she's doing. I know she just turned 2 weeks ago, but she can't just keep doing the same thing. This was the first time in a match where I think we've really seen her, you know, cheat to win and really go heelish in winning the match. And what was even better about this was... And I just love the whole idea that I think what I said earlier, well, I was kind of joking. I said, well, you know, on Tuesday, Bayley was, or you know, a week ago, she was talking about the kids. I was just showing the kids loyalty. Be loyal to your friends. That's why I helped my friend Sasha. Well, here's the next lesson, kids. Do whatever it takes to win. That's what she did. A great lesson for the children. Do what needs to be done. Now, even better, when this was over, Bayley grabbed the belt and she hightailed it to the back like she had to go to the bathroom. She ran back there like the Roadrunner. She was not waiting around for a replay. She was not waiting around for the referee to reverse his decision or change his mind. I thought that was funny. So up to this point, we've had nothing but a lot of short matches on this show. But the finish, I thought, to this one, even though it was only 3 minutes, I thought the finish to this was great. And we had the New Day defending the SmackDown Tag Team titles against the Revival, Scott Dawson and Dash Wilder. Xavier Woods had a giant brace on his knee, still selling the injury at the hands of Orton in the Revival from a month ago. There was a very scary spot where I want to say it was Dash Wilder. It was on the apron. He gave Big E The old Samoa Joe. Yeah, that move Samoa Joe does in the corner. The sit down. Basically the Uranage. Well, he gave him that move. But he did it off the apron to the floor. And it looked like the back of Big E's head may have hit the ring steps on the way down. He looked like he was okay after that, but that was scary. So Xavier had to go at it alone for a while. Later on, they hit the Shatter Machine on the floor to Big E. Shatter Machine to Woods in the ring. They had the match won. They didn't go for the pin. So I'm thinking, all right, typical dipshit, dumb heel finish. They have the match won. Oh, they want to gloat. Well, they're going to do it again. Then they're going to get beat. But no. No, they hit the Shatter Machine. They didn't go for the pin. They wanted to torture him some more. So they ripped off his knee brace. And Dawson locked him in an inverted figure four. Woods is screaming in agony. He's reaching for the ropes. But he can't make it. The pain is just too much. And he taps out. This was the best thing on the show up to this point. And the Revival now, a Raw team, are now the SmackDown Tag Team Champions. It's the one thing that bothered me about this. This wild card rule cannot die soon enough. Hopefully it's in its final weeks. But the Revival now are the new SmackDown Tag Team Champions. Let's take a pause here for a second. I want to just check out what's going on in the chat room. We've got over 1,100 listening live. Thank you so much for tuning into this Clash of Champions review here tonight. I just want to take a quick look at some of the super chats so I am able to give a shout out to your boy Will. Thank you for the $4.99 super chat. Jake Winans, thank you very much. Zachary Showalter, Young Bibby, and Ryan W. Thank you very much for the super chat donations as we move along here. I just want to show off this shirt. I love this shirt. Can I just show it off? You guys don't care, right? Look at this shirt. Look at this. Michael Myers. I'm a huge Halloween fan. You know, last week I thought we had a new Halloween movie coming out next month, and then I realized that it's not coming out until next year, and that made me very sad. So, anyway, I might wear this to sleep tonight. I do a lot of things in this shirt. Oh, boy. At least now you can put a face with the creepiness, right? That's something. Alexa Bliss. What the hell is wrong with me? Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross against Fire and Desire, Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville for the women's tag team titles. What I want to actually do is flash this sign. You saw it at the beginning. This was from the women's tag team title match. A sign that somebody held up that I just thought was too good to not clip and show everybody in case you missed it. Stop killing alligators to make Gatorade. Get it? I thought that was brilliant. Whoever held up that sign, you get a thumbs up from me. That was great. That actually, you know what? I will say this. That was the most entertaining part of this match. No joke. That was the best part of this women's tag team title match. We had R-Truth and Carmella and the whole brigade of 24/7 jabrones. They ran down in the middle of the match. They were all chasing after R-Truth. Alexa rolled up Truth at one point, got a near fall for the 24/7 green monster belt. Watching Mandy Rose and Alexa Bliss in the ring together, beautiful women. Just very, very pretty women, right? No doubt about it. Watching them in the ring together, wrestling, if you can call it that, performing, whatever word you want to use, I don't need to see that ever again. Not good. Not good. Mandy and Sonya hit the high-low. Total elimination to Alexa. And nearly won the titles, but Nikki Cross made the save. Nikki pinned Mandy in the end with a twisting neckbreaker to get revenge for Mandy calling her ugly on TV last week. Ugly is not a word that I would use to describe Nikki Cross, but it is a word I would use to describe this match. And I think the less said about that, the better. We had the Intercontinental Championship on the line next. The Miz challenging Shinsuke Nakamura. Nakamura is now wearing a cape to the ring. Some other notable stars who wore capes early in their career. King Kong Bundy. Believe it or not, when he first came to WWE, King Kong Bundy, and maybe it was only one taping, But King Kong Bundy wore a cape, a black cape, to the ring. And then there's Kane. Kane wore a cape at least once. I think he actually wore it in Madison Square Garden. Before they finally decided, you know what? This cape thing, this probably ain't going to work. We'll get rid of the cape. Capes just make everything cooler. I might do my next review and wear a cape. Actually, you know what? That's not a bad idea. That is not a bad idea. I may wear... you know what? I'm going to do that. But I will absolutely forget, so I just need you people to remind me. Sami Zayn, he provided commentary on the live mic in the opening minutes. He got so annoying, they cut his mic off, which was a shame, because I was entertained, but I guess the people in the back weren't, so they cut his mic off. Miz, later on, grabbed the mic out of his hand, even though it was turned off and it didn't work, and he chucked it all the way onto the stage. Not a bad pitching arm there on the Miz. We could use him here on the Mets. We're in a wild card chase. We're not doing too well. We could use an extra arm. So, Miz avoided a Kinshasa. He locked on the figure four. Nakamura made the ropes. Kinshasa connects, but Miz kicks out. Nakamura tries again. Miz counters it into a skull-crushing finale, but Sami Zayn jumps up on the apron. He distracts the referee. So Miz chases Sami around for a bit, walks right into a Kinshasa. He throws him in the ring, hits one final Kinshasa for the win, and Shinsuke Nakamura retains the Intercontinental Championship. It's not been a good year for The Miz. I'm not talking like on a personal note. Like on a personal note, the guy's living the life, right? He's got a hot wife, he just had a second kid, or he's about to. He's got this, by all accounts, a successful reality TV show on USA. You know, he lives a very charmed life. But on television, on WWE television this year, he has just had a complete failure of a year. And it all goes back to that Shane McMahon feud. It has all been downhill for him ever since then. So this match was just okay. It was really nothing special. They did officially announce, it was only a rumor up to this point, but now it is official that there will be a draft next month. It starts on the October 11th episode of SmackDown, and it will carry on into Monday Night Raw on Columbus Day, October 14th. If you want to hear my picks and moves that I would make, roster moves, I went over all of that on last week's show, episode 616. It's up in the archives on iTunes and Spotify and Pandora and all the little logos you see on your screen right now. You can find the full podcast. And then we got to the Raw Women's Championship. Becky Lynch defending against Sasha Banks. The very first match I can remember, and it might have been the very first singles match that they had televised, between Becky and Sasha was, how many years ago? Was it 5 years already? Might have been 5 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago. From NXT TakeOver Unstoppable. And it's a match that gets overlooked, I think, because people tend to think of the match in Brooklyn between Sasha and Bayley, which truly is, and I was in the building for that, and I'm happy I was, truly one of the best WWE matches I think that the company has ever done. Not just in NXT, I think in company history. I'm not saying it's in the top five all time, but it's on, you know, you put together a giant list of the greatest matches in company history, this one's going to have a place on there. So people think a lot about that, but they don't talk as much about that first match between Becky and Sasha. And that match was really good. Really good. So I already knew they had good chemistry together. But it's been many years since we've had the chance to see them one-on-one. So we got to see it tonight. And this was the match I was most looking forward to coming into the show. And I thought that it delivered. I thought that this match was awesome. Even with the non-finish, with the bullshit finish, which they had to do to get to the next one. You know, if they had given this match an actual finish, if Sasha was going to win the championship, or even if Becky, you know, was going to retain, they could have easily closed out the show with this. Crowd was really into it more than anything else on the show up to this point. Maybe, even looking back now, maybe everything except The Fiend. They were really into this match. Becky got to disarm her. Sasha made the ropes. Not one, but two backstabbers by Sasha into the bank statement, but Becky rolled through. Sasha grabbed the chair, brought it into the ring to distract the referee. Chair shot to the gut with a second chair while the referee is distracted. And a shining wizard by Sasha. Only gets a two count. Sasha brings in another chair. Now at this point, I'm looking at this and I'm saying, okay, And they even mentioned on commentary at one point the Eddie Guerrero thing. You know how Eddie used to take the chair and, you know, fake a chair shot like the guy hit him when he really didn't. And she's the biggest, you know, Eddie Guerrero fan alive. But by this point now, she's bringing another chair into the ring. Her, what, her third chair now? What sense does it make for her to do this if she wants to win the championship? Right? She's going to cost herself the title? That doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So Becky got a hold of the chair. She took a swing. Sasha ducked, and she hit the referee with it by accident. And she knocked out the referee. They brawl through the crowd, up onto the concourse. Becky threw mustard on Sasha. Sasha's husband was probably in the back having a heart attack watching that, since he makes all of her gear. I'm sure that's a bitch to get out. So they brawled all the way back down to the ring. Referee is still out. He is still out. The chairs in WWE apparently are made of concrete. Instead of ringing a bell, we have Michael Cole on commentary inform us that the match is over and Becky Lynch is still the champion. That was lame. As much as I like this match, that was lame. That was a lame way of letting us, not even letting the people in the building know, but letting us know that the match was over. Becky laid into Sasha with some chair shots to the back. A bunch of referees ran down to break it up. I think I spotted Pat Buck in there. WWE producer Pat Buck. I hear he's got a mean right hand. Fans booed the finish because they never heard any official announcement about the match being over. At least they cheered, though, when they announced Becky was still the champion, so that was good. But the official result is a DQ win for Sasha Banks. Referee was still unconscious, but somehow found a way to call for the disqualification. That takes talent. That takes talent. So this is clearly going to go to the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view next month, and I don't see how you don't put this match inside the Cell. This is the kind of feud that the Cell was tailor-made for. You know, and I know Rollins and The Fiend are going to be in the Cell, and that's fine. But when I look at the other matches, I mean, Kofi and Orton, I'll talk about that in a second, but that, as far as I'm concerned, that's over. That's done. I mean, they could do it on that first Fox show one more time if they want to, but that feud is over now. So I look at these other matches, and I look at these other feuds, and I say to myself, is there really any other match that's deserving of being inside the Cell? Well, I mean, I guess you could say Roman, maybe. Roman and Rowan. I don't really want to see that again, though. It's Becky and Sasha. It's a personal issue, and that is what Hell in a Cell was made for. And if they do it, it would only be, I think, the second women's Hell in a Cell match. The first one, Sasha was in that one, too. She lost to Charlotte. So I think that's where we're headed next month. Funny part of this, as soon as the match was over, and this was after Becky hit the referee with the chair, Kevin Owens tweeted, probably from his couch at home, "I guess Becky's fired." Well, hey, he's not wrong. If you're going to be consistent, be consistent. Becky should be fired. If Kevin Owens is fired, then Becky should be fired. So we have Kofi Kingston defending the WWE Championship against Randy Orton. This was a very dull match. For a match with this much history behind it, as personal as it was supposed to be, and they made it out to be, it just sort of plodded along until the last few minutes. And the people, you know, I have to say this, when Kofi first came out, he didn't get a great reaction. When they did the ring introductions at the beginning, and they announced him, it sounded like the people of Charlotte were pretty sick of all the pancake stuff. He definitely got a mixed reaction here on this show. I don't know if that's a sign of, you know, Kofi fatigue and pancake fatigue, or if it was just one city on one night. We'll see, I guess, at TV this week, but it was very noticeable here. He did win some of those fans over by the end. Yeah, he didn't do anything wrong, but when he came out, it was very clear he was not as over as you would hope that the WWE champion would be, and there were a lot of Randy Orton fans in the crowd. Orton just punished Kofi for most of the match. Kofi made the heroic babyface comeback. Orton hit his snap power slam. RKO attempt, misses, gets rolled up but kicks out, finally hits the RKO. Kofi gets his foot on the ropes. Orton tries for the punt. Kofi moves, hits the Trouble in Paradise for the 1-2-3. So Kofi Kingston pins Randy Orton. He exorcises the demon. And I don't mean Finn Balor, but he exercises the demon of Randy Orton from 10 years ago when Orton called him stupid and killed his push dead here in front of a crowd that was pretty much dead for the match. He beats Randy Orton and retains the championship. So his reign continues, at least until Brock gets drafted to SmackDown. So this match went 20 minutes. They could have easily shaved five or more off of it. I just thought it was boring. I just thought this match was very boring. I want to go just check the chat real quick. I mean, am I wrong? I'm curious if people agree with me on this. Maybe I'm just wrong. Maybe I'm in the minority on this. But I thought that match was just super boring. Well, it looks like I got a lot of people agreeing with me, so I don't feel so bad now. I'm not trying to pick on Kofi. I'm calling it like I see it. You know, they just were not into him from the moment he came out. And until they woke up in those last few minutes, they just were not into this match at all. And the match itself, you know, look, mechanically it was fine. I expect more out of the WWE Championship. No wonder it's slotted third or fourth from the top. Put out a match like that. Imagine if they ended the show with that match. You can't do that. So, he needs a new opponent, or they're going to have to get that belt off him, one or the other. Roman Reigns against Eric Rowan. No disqualification. This turned into a fun brawl. Better than I expected it to be. It would have died without that no DQ stip, so that was very smart of them to add that. So we got, you know, very little time spent in the ring early on, a lot of weapons, a lot of plunder. At one point, Rowan ripped off part of the top part like of the apron where the LED board is, and he smashed Roman face first onto it. Roman went for a Superman punch outside the ring. Rowan caught him and powerbombed him through the announce table, very quickly threw him back into the ring, only got a near fall. That was a close near fall. That was a good one. They had me fooled there for about a split second. That he kicked out. So then they end up brawling all throughout the arena. And they're hitting each other. You know, Rowan, they got that jib camera again that Rowan killed Roman with on television last week. Roman this time used the jib camera on the crane. He slammed it a couple of times into Rowan. And Rowan sort of rolled down the ramp and back to the ring. So now Roman is staring. He's staring down the aisle. He sees Eric Rowan. He does the ooh-ah, like he's Al Pacino. And he's getting ready to hit the running spear. And as he comes in for the spear, he gets attacked. He gets cut off by who? Luke Harper. We have not seen Luke Harper in months. Luke Harper very publicly tried to get out of his WWE contract. He put a very public letter out there on social media. He had submitted it, I guess, to Vince McMahon, and Vince McMahon said, no, I am not going to give you your release, and in fact, I'm going to tack more time onto your contract. So I don't remember offhand exactly how much time he's got left. It's at least a few months, if not more than that. But he's been sitting on the sidelines ever since, and there's been reports and rumors that, you know, Vince McMahon just doesn't see anything in this guy. And I still believe that to be true. I don't think that's just some dirt sheet rumor. So how do I know this? Why do I believe this? We saw him tonight. Yeah, we did. We did see him tonight. I'd be curious to know who pitched that idea, because there's no way that that idea came from Vince McMahon. I bet you that he had to be sold on that idea, and I'm glad he was. It was really cool to see Luke Harper back on this show. Instead of just tweeting out, you know what day it is, on social media, that's all he's been doing now for months. It's kind of like I think of the Killer Cross situation. I just talked about that earlier today in Impact and how bad Impact comes off in that situation. Because it's not just that he wants out of his contract. All right, well, he signed a contract. You can't just let the guy go. You know, you're not just going to let everybody go who feels like, hey, I want to go make money somewhere else. But to not book him and to go to AAA. You know, AAA had a show tonight at the theater at Madison Square Garden that Killer Cross was supposed to be on, and Impact said, no, we want him off. So now they're actively working against him, getting certain bookings. That ain't right. And my whole thing is this. All right, you've got him under contract. Use him or release him. And the same applies to Luke Harper. Use him or release him. Use him or let him go somewhere else. And they've chosen to use him. Now, it's funny because to see him out there with Eric Rowan, And he did help Rowan win the match, by the way. So he beat up Roman. They got Roman back in the ring. And Rowan beat Roman. Rowan. He beat him with the claw slam. So Eric Rowan now has a pinfall win on pay-per-view against Roman Reigns. He also has a WrestleMania match against The Rock. This is really fucking with my head here. Eric Rowan is going to have like the weirdest resume the day that he goes into the Hall of Fame. Because everybody's going to go into the Hall of Fame at some point. Everybody goes in. Maybe he'll go in as part of a Wyatt family induction in, you know, 20 years. But you look at his resume when he comes to the Hall eventually, it's going to be very weird. Because he doesn't exactly project the aura of somebody who you would look at and say, oh, this is a top guy in the company. But yet he's got a WrestleMania match with The Rock. Now granted, that match was 6 seconds long. And he needed assistance to beat Roman Reigns. But even still. I was very happy to see Luke Harper back. And it begs the question now, you know, are they going to come on TV and say, well, it was Harper all along who tried to murder Roman Reigns? Or was it a combination? Maybe it was Rowan who tried to kill him with the forklift, and it was Harper who tried to run him down with a car. Where does Daniel Bryan fit into all this? Is Daniel Bryan really split from these guys? Is he going to go be a babyface again? Or are we going to find out, as I still think we will, that he was the mastermind behind this entire thing? And we end up with a faction led by Bryan with Rowan and Harper, which is what I was hoping they were going to do earlier this year, around the Elimination Chamber time. I thought in the chamber we would see Harper make a comeback because he was just coming back from wrist surgery. I think this was before he had the match with Donovan Dijak, WrestleMania weekend, that supposedly Vince McMahon hated. He had just come back or was coming back from the wrist injury, and I said, man, Bryan can lead his own little Wyatt family. You know, have Luke Harper show up in the cell. He comes out from under the ring or something, and he helps Bryan retain the championship, and they didn't do it. So how many months later is it now? It was February, this is September. So what is that? 8 months? 8 months later, we're finally getting to see it. We'll see where it goes. This is obviously not over yet. We'll see where it goes. Before we get to the main event, I want to just pop back in the chat real quick. Say welcome to the 1,500 plus that we have listening live. And I want to just show, I don't even know if we have any more super chats, but if we do, I just want to acknowledge those individuals. If anybody did, I think I already hit these guys, so that's great. So we get to the main event of this show, and the main event of this show, and there you see the phone number on the screen in case you do want to try calling in. We'll take a few calls when I'm done here. But the main event was Seth Rollins defending the Universal Championship against Braun Strowman. Now, they lost the tag team titles earlier in the night. They come back out here later in the show. Braun right away, like a bat out of hell, comes, you know, charging in after Rollins, and he's beating the hell out of Rollins. So we skip ahead a little bit. This match really didn't go that long. I think this match went, what did I clock it at? I use my trusty iPhone sometimes to clock these things. I think this match went about 10 or 11 minutes. So it wasn't really a long match. But it was actually one of the better matches I've seen Braun Strowman in. It was pretty much all action. There really weren't many, you know, if any, real rest holds that I can recall. It was all motion. And at one point, we had Braun Strowman. He got a bloody nose somehow. He was on the top rope. So, you know, Braun is running over Seth outside the ring. He does that run around the ring, and he just mows him down. Nobody sells that bump better than Kevin Owens. I mean, Kevin Owens must have taken that bump 5,000 times last year when he was feuding with Braun Strowman. But he just mows the guy down. Right, so we skip ahead a little bit, and they did a spot where Braun ended up going over, hurling over the German announce table. I think it was the German, right? The German announce table. And he super kicks Braun onto the Spanish announce table. So now he's looking up, and he's going to do his big dive off the top rope through the table. Strowman gets up. He scurries up to the top to cut him off. He knocks Seth down. What's he going to do? Well, he decides he's going to go aerial. And there was a very brief, very frightening moment where Braun was trying to steady himself on that top rope, and he almost slipped. he's a big dude. I mean, this guy's 385 pounds, and you know, big guys aren't exactly the most graceful. That could have ended really badly. But he somehow managed to not slip and not fall. Because you got to imagine it. He's bleeding. You got fucking sweat and spit all over these ropes. You know, it's not easy to stand on the top rope. But he does this giant splash off the top rope. I almost feel like he should have just won with it. This huge, giant splash off the top rope. But he couldn't go for the pin. In the end, it took 4 curb stomps. I know they don't call it curb stomp anymore, but fuck it. I'm going to call it curb stomp. 4 curb stomps and 1 pedigree. And Seth Rollins pinned Braun Strowman. And if you're going to pin Braun Strowman, who has once again fallen short in his bid to become the Universal Champion, this title is like kryptonite to this guy. But if you were going to beat him, that was the way to do it. You know, you got to just throw everything at him. 4 curb stomps and a pedigree. You know, they did everything that they felt they could to kind of keep him strong, even though they were beating him. But that's the corner they painted themselves into. Somebody had to win and somebody had to lose. They could have had The Fiend come out, had a screwy finish, and did a triple threat at Hell in a Cell. We already got a screwy finish, though, earlier, in the Becky Lynch-Sasha Banks match. So to do a second one on this show would have been overkill. So they did the best they could with it. And I like I said, I thought it was one of the better, if not best, matches I've seen Braun Strowman in. I think he and Rollins both deserve a lot of credit for that. Rollins, he goes up to the stage. They put the copyright box on the screen. You think, okay, they're going to go off the air. And then we hear the sound of the lights being shut off, and everybody knows what that means, and the lights go out. And we hear the sounds of The Fiend. And we see The Fiend, and he's got Rollins in position. He gives him the Sister Abigail on the stage. And then he sits him up. And he takes his glove, takes his hand, and he sticks it down his gullet. And he gives him the mandible claw. And he's screaming and laughing behind the mask. And they go off the air. People seem very happy to see The Fiend. I think they expected it. He's still an attraction, so when he does make an appearance, it's still special. I don't know if it still will be as special 3 months, 6 months, a year from now, but for now, because we don't see him that often, and you know, the novelty of it all, it's still a special thing when he shows up. It's going to be interesting. You know, I talked about them painting themselves into a corner here with Strowman and having no choice but to beat him. They potentially have painted themselves into a corner with The Fiend as well, because he's now going to challenge for the championship at Hell in a Cell. And he's got to win that title. I don't really see any other outcome here. He's got to win that championship. It's way too early to beat him. Now, I almost thought, well, if he's going to attack The Undertaker at MSG the other night, and you know, puts him in the claw and puts The Undertaker down, what a big moment it would be for him. And then maybe at Hell in a Cell, they do some shenanigans with The Undertaker where the lights go out and The Undertaker shows up and he costs, you know, Bray the title without him being pinned and do some screwy finish. You know, at least it would have made sense. But they didn't do it. They did nothing with him and The Undertaker. So it's just going to be him and it's going to be Seth on my birthday, on October 6th. Oh, lucky me. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do in that situation. But they just cannot beat The Fiend. They just can't do that. Let's check the Twitter poll. And the Twitter poll is a lot higher by now, but I had to cut this before I went live. So we've gotten a lot of votes since then. But as of the moment before I went live, we already had over 1,000 votes. And there you see the results so far. 53% of you say thumbs up. 47% of you say thumbs down. So, not exactly 50-50, but pretty damn close. So, it seems like there's a lot of divided opinion about this pay-per-view. Which, you know, it's not surprising to me. I said at the top I'd go 6.5, maybe 7. You know, I'm being a little more generous maybe than a lot of other people are being. But, it wasn't a great show. It wasn't like some overly fantastic show. Let's take some calls. We'll take a few here before we wrap up. I want to hear from you guys what you thought of the show. We'll start here with area code 317. You are on the air, 317.
Hey, Solid Monster, nice to meet you. I'm Malik. How are you?
Good, Malik. How are you?
I'm doing great, thank you. I just wanted to say that I thought it was a pretty decent show. I wouldn't say it was a bad show, but I just feel like once you cut all the fluff in the middle and once you get down to it, it's actually a really good show, but there's just so much in between that I think it just sort of leads to the negative responses because people just think about the bad stuff. But when you look at the good stuff, I thought that both women's title matches were good. I liked the Universal title match. I knew the Fiend was coming out at the end. I know when they're posing at the end, it's either then or right after they do the copyright stuff. But overall, I thought it was a good show, and I wanted to ask you, because I was thinking, you know, who could be the next person to challenge Kofi after, you know, beating Randy Orton at the show tonight, and I thought maybe Drew McIntyre would be a great choice. I don't know what plans they have for him after the draft, but I feel like, you know, that's somebody they could build around, and that's somebody they could use, and I think it'd make for a great match and a great moment. What do you think?
Yeah, I think McIntyre could work. I mean, McIntyre was hurt. He had a little minor surgery recently. And right now he's on Raw. That could easily change in a few weeks. In fact, I'm not so sure that isn't the best move for him, because what else is there for him to do on Raw? I mean, I guess he could feud with Rollins, but if Rollins is going to be occupied with The Fiend, maybe McIntyre being a big draft pick on SmackDown and challenging Kofi, you know, that could be the way to go. And I think, look, you put the championship on McIntyre, give him a run with it. Why not? The guy looks the part. Look at the guy. You know, he looks like your quintessential, you know, world champion pro wrestler. So why not give him the shot? So yeah, I'd be fine with that. That's actually not a bad idea. I kind of joked before I said Lesnar. I was only half joking, because I do think there's actually a chance that they would do something like that. And that maybe they would even do it on one of those early Fox shows. I mean, I guess I don't know that they could do it on the first one, because if Lesnar gets drafted, the draft isn't until the following week. But you want to make a big splash on Fox? Brock Lesnar wrestling his first match on free TV, and let's see, last match on TV he would have had probably was, oh gosh, 2004? That's a long-ass time. That's a long time. So either one of those I think would work. Let's go to Chris in Pensacola, Florida, home of Roman Reigns.
Hey, Solid Monster, how you doing tonight?
I'm good, Chris. How are you?
I'm doing good. My question for you is this. Do you think with the tease when they were talking about the King of Ring tournament, how all of a sudden it was supposed to be on Clash Champions and now it's going to be on Raw, do you think it was a good idea that it wasn't on Clash of Champions tonight, or do you think it should have been on Clash Champions? Because if they're pushing either Corbin or Gable, would it be a more of an achievement and a crowning moment to do it at Clash Champions instead of on Raw tomorrow night?
No, and you know, I talked about this earlier. I actually think, in hindsight, it was actually a good idea, because so many matches on this show tonight went short. There were a lot of really short matches on this show. I know Becky and Sasha got like 20 minutes, but even the main event with Rollins and Strowman, they got 10. You know, AJ was relegated to the pre-show. He got 4. There were a lot of short matches. So at least on television, I mean, you might have a commercial break or two, but, you know, if they wanted to, they could even headline the show with it. I'm not saying they will, but it's probably I'm almost positive it's going to get more time than it would have had at the pay-per-view tonight. So I think in the end, it probably will end up working out better for those two. So I don't really have a problem with it, because otherwise it just would have been another match in the middle of the show, and the show was crowded enough as it was. I was happy the show went off the air early. I was not prepared, which is why we got a late start tonight. It caught me off guard. But I love the pay-per-views when they go off early. So, you know, had Gable and Corbin been on the show tonight, we probably would have been going until 11 o'clock. So I'm fine with it. Let's go to area code 407. You are live on the air.
Hey, Jason. It's Glenn. What's up?
Hey, Glenn. How you doing?
Doing good. How did you enjoy the show tonight?
I thought the show was good. I wouldn't say it was any more than that, but I thought it was a pretty decent show overall.
For me, it was neutral. I liked it. Yeah, I didn't like it. So, real quick, you say Kofi Kingston and Randy Orton should be done. They shouldn't have one more match. Let me try to give you an idea. How about you have a Hell in a Cell match between Randy Orton and Kofi Kingston, which is where the rivalry should end, but let's up the ante. Let's make it a six-man tag. Revival, Randy Orton versus The New Day, winner-take-all Hell in a Cell match. Your thoughts?
Winner-take-all Hell in a Cell. I feel like we've had a couple of winner-take-all matches on TV this year already. Yeah, you know, I guess you could do that. I mean, that's it's an idea, you know. And actually, the last time we saw The New Day in a tag team Hell in a Cell, I think it was against the Usos. And it was actually a hell of a match.
And actually,
yeah,
actually, it'd be the second time in the world that we'd had six people inside Hell in a Cell, first being 2000. We've never had six men in a Hell in a Cell match since then. Because it's always Elimination Chamber that had six men.
That's right. No, that's a great point. No, I don't think that's a terrible idea. I if that's what they wanted to do, then I would be okay with that. I'm just saying, as far as the whole Orton and Kofi thing, he beat Orton. That was the whole point. He couldn't beat Orton all those years ago, and Orton was throwing it in his face again. You can't beat me. You're not good enough. And tonight, it wasn't a great match, but he won, and he beat him. So if they wanted to move on, they could certainly move on. We kind of saw what we wanted to see. But yeah, if they wanted to drag it out for one more show, winner take all, it's not a bad idea. I'd be down for that. 980, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a couple quick questions, if that's all right.
I would hope you do. That's why you're calling in.
Okay, Force, do you think that them putting AJ Styles and Cedric on the pre-show was possibly due to some people saying that the pre-show doesn't feel important and they wanted to add more level of importance to the pre-show? And my second question is, how exactly did the crowd come off to you from watching it on TV? Because I was there in attendance, and my section was very loud, but I've heard from numerous people that it looked quiet on TV, which I found very peculiar, because we were up and down all the night, especially when Sasha and Becky brawled in the crowd. We were standing up trying to watch the action. Like, how did it come across on TV the way the crowd sounded?
Well, thank you for the question. It came across, it was very hit or miss. I mean, there were times during the night where the crowd sounded dead. They sounded like they were on sleeping pills. And the Kofi Orton match was the prime example of that. But then, you know, during like the Becky and Sasha match, they were really up for it. I think they got into the SmackDown Tag Team title match pretty well. So it was very hit or miss. It was very hit or miss. Rowan and Roman, I think they were pretty into that, you know, especially as they were going through the crowd. But on the whole, you know, it's not like they were overly energetic for the majority of the night. You know, when they had a really good match that was exciting, they were into it. And when they had a match that was a bore, like the WWE title match for most of it, at least until the final 2 minutes, then they didn't really sound like they were reacting very well. Let's take 901. You are on the air.
Hey, this is Kevin from Memphis.
Hey, Kevin, how are you?
Okay, great. Well, I watched the show tonight, and I thought it was pretty decent to okay. Sometimes I believe that certain fans just don't enjoy the show, period, regardless of if it's good or not. Like, I think this is a pretty decent pay-per-view. It was nothing really just that bad. Nothing great either, but, like, not awful either.
Okay. That's fair. No, I agree. Yeah. I mean, you have fans who are negative. Is there a question in there?
What do you think ultimately they are potentially going to do with Undertaker and Fiend later on? Because I think it's something they said beforehand that there was still a reason for Undertaker being there. Do you think that ultimately after the Fiend won the title, him and Undertaker would have something going on, some type of program?
I mean, maybe for WrestleMania, I could see if they want to build something for that. They had their chance this week. They could have done something. They could have planted the seed this week. They didn't do it. So that tells me that probably not. Unless they want to do some kind of big match at WrestleMania, I think they missed their chance. This was the time. Undertaker was coming to SmackDown. Why was he coming to SmackDown? Just to make an appearance? It was the perfect time for them to do something and actually have him put down. He's put down some other legends, you know, Jerry Lawler, Mick Foley. But to put down The Undertaker, a guy that he has history with, a guy that he would, you know, in theory, have a reason to want to put down. And they didn't do anything. That tells me there's no interest right now in doing anything with him and The Undertaker. So I wouldn't hold my breath on that. I don't think that's something that we're going to be getting anytime soon. 210, you are on the air.
Evening, Mr. Monster.
Good evening.
Yeah, about what you had said about The Fiend, having to win. Do you honestly see them booking him to win, or do you think it's too early?
Well, I mean, he's already won, right? He's already beaten Finn Balor. I know Balor was leaving. Balor's kind of a semi-big name. So he's already 1-0. And do I think they will have him win? I do. They can make a lot of boneheaded decisions. There's some smart people who work there. They have to see what they have with this guy. And I would hope that they are smart enough to not beat him straight away. There's no reason to do that. So I think they realize what they have in him. They can see the fans get excited, right, when he shows up on TV. I don't know how his YouTube videos do. I haven't checked all that stuff out. I don't know what that's a barometer of anyway. But yeah, no, I think they will. I think they'll do right by him because they have to recognize that they have something special with this guy. And if they eventually squander it, then they eventually squander it. But it's still early. I don't really see them screwing that up so quickly. And we will go to the 305.
Hi, I'm a first-time caller, but I have a question. It's not about Clash of Champions, but WWE in general. I read a wrestling fan blog talking about the possibility of us signing Tejano, his brother, Dragon Lee, and Pentagon Jr. Is this clickbait article, or do you think it's true?
Pentagon Jr.?
Yeah, the contracts are already up with TNA. So, yeah, Pentagon and his brother Dragon Lee, stuff like that. Do you think this is clickbait, or is this true that we're going to be able to sign Tejano, his brother Pentagon, and Dragon Lee to contracts the WWE?
I don't know where you read that from. That's not clickbait. That's just horseshit. I don't know what website you saw that on. Unless I misunderstood you also, did you say that Pentagon and Dragon Lee are brothers? I mean, maybe if they're brothers, that's news to me. It probably would be news to them too. I know Pentagon and Phoenix, they're brothers. I mean, it's in the tag team name too. The Lucha Bros. But no, they're not brothers. And they are not coming to WWE. They are signed, well, Pentagon is anyway. I don't know about Dragon Lee. But Pentagon is signed to AEW. You know, he's still working indies and stuff. But he's going to be going to AEW soon, full-time, on TV. He won't be able to do those indie shows anymore. So, I don't think AEW would like that very much if he just went to WWE. So, no. Tejano, I haven't heard anything about. I have not heard about Tejano as far as domestically since Lucha Underground just sort of faded away. I mean, I guess Tejano's doing whatever he's doing in Mexico, but I have not heard anything at all as far as him coming to WWE. Nope, that's news to me. So I don't know what website you got that from, but you might want to cross that website off your list. I certainly wouldn't get my news from there. So we'll wrap it up there. We got a good amount of calls tonight. I want to thank everybody who tuned in live for the review. This will be archived. Hopefully it won't take very long to process. So if you want to listen back, or anybody who is not listening for whatever reason, it'll be available on the channel to stream later tonight. And there'll be other videos and clips going up on the channel tomorrow and Tuesday as well. So please hit the sub button. Also, please hit the thumbs up button on this video if you would be so kind. That would be tremendous if you would do that. And I'm just going to flash this real quick too. I know some of you know what this is. This is a children's book, a children's story that was authored by my mother. She wrote this story many years ago. Did not live long enough, unfortunately, to see the book published. He passed away last year. I was able to work with a publisher and get this book published finally this summer. It is now available in hardcover form or ebook form, so you can get the ebook on your Kindle or your phone, or you can buy the hardcover right now. You can just go to Amazon.com. It's The Adventure of Hardy the Horse by Michelle Solomon. If you do have little kids or know somebody who has little kids, might be a great gift for them. But I just wanted to mention that to anybody who may not know. If you don't listen to the full shows, maybe you didn't know that my mother had done this book and that I have been working my ass off for most of the year to make this happen. Who knew how difficult it would be to get a book out there? But anyway, so I'm really proud of this, and I'm in the middle of promoting it, so I wanted to just mention it here to anybody who may not have been aware. So that's going to wrap things up here for the Clash. The slide here. There we go. I want to thank Steve Mello for the artwork, by the way. He does tremendous work. Pro Wrestle Links on Twitter. Steve Mello, very talented guy. Thank you, as always, for your hard work. I'll be back here on the channel again very soon. We got a lot more content coming. AEW is about to debut. NXT is expanding to 2 hours. Going to be a lot of good shit coming up. I'll have another live stream review for Hell in a Cell on October 6th. So I hope and expect all of you will be right back here on the channel.